Hi, I'm Mike Nagrant, and you're listening to Chefs on the Grill from Chicago, Illinois.
4, 3, 2, 1 more time.
Hey there, welcome back to another edition of Chefs on the Grill. Chefs on the Grill is a collaboration between Hungry Magazine and Chicago Magazine, and you can find all of our podcasts at www.chicagomag.com and www.hungrymag.com. This month I sit down with owner, front of house manager Emmanuel Noni and chef Kendall Duquet from Sepia Restaurant at 123 North Jefferson. Noni and Duquet are seasoned vets, with Noni having opened hotel restaurants around the world for Hyatt, including most recently Nomi in Chicago. Chef Duquet was on the opening team at True, he worked with Rocco DiSpirito in New York, and spent the last few months training at Chez Panisse before opening Sepia. From the smoky grilled octopus to the tender pork rillette with bacon pistachio brittle, I think along with the Agridoux opening, the quality of food at Sepia is some of this year's best. Enjoy the interview.
Well, Emmanuel, the first thing I'm interested in is you have been all over the world. You've been to Hong Kong, Tokyo. You could have settled anywhere, you know, but you settled in Chicago. I know your last gig, of course, was with the Park Hyatt.
Sure.
So there's some geography there, but why Chicago of all places?
You know, I have many favorite cities, but I really fell in love with Chicago. I think the city is it's a really exciting city in terms of restaurant scene. It's people are very generally welcoming and hospitable. I feel in love, you know, it's one of the best cities I've lived in.
How does it compare to Tokyo or Korea? I mean, are the food cultures there as developed, or
I think it's very, very different. Again, every city is very different in terms of culture, in terms of food. I think that what excites me about Chicago is that it's really growing. There are a lot of opportunities. Especially with us, with Sepia, we were so well, you know, we were so well received, and everybody has been so excited about what we're doing. So it shows that Chicago is very open to new styles, to new concepts.
Kendall, I know you have a thesis in literature from Berkeley. What did you study? I wondered what your thesis was.
I initially started as an English literature major, but I read a lot of Latin American poetry, and that's really what I fell in love with. So what I finished doing was Latin American literature and some poets from the early 20th century, Pablo Neruda and such. So it was my aesthetics back when I was young was very driven emotionally and if you could say sensually. And I think that the poetry from that era, even though it had a lot of beauty to it, it mixed in with politics and society, everything that was going on in Latin American literature. So for me, it was, you know, I moved to America when I was quite young, so I feel very, I feel American. And I missed that connection with my Latin American culture.
You're from Ecuador, right?
Yes, I am from Ecuador. So again, when I started studying that and reading Latin American literature in general and poetry, it connected me back to a source. And that's, I think, what led me in that direction.
I wonder, you know, being a literature major, do you think that affects the way you cook? Is there sort of like the soul of a poet in you, you know, because that's what you studied before you did culinary?
I think culinary really encompasses a lot of my journey through life. I think everything that I've wanted to do, I've done, and so I could never have any regrets. Not only did I study literature, I played music when I was younger as well. I studied the sciences and everything. I think I had a search for myself going through life in general, and I think when I got into the culinary field, it really struck a chord with me because it hit an entire spectrum of everything that I wanted to do really in my life. It was something that I could do aesthetically, something that I could do with my hands, something that I could put emotion on a plate, working with other people, the business aspect to it, definitely, you know, being hospitable sort of ambiance, you know, and being generous in that sense. The culinary field for me really has all that variety, and yes, literature and that artistic sort of phase part of my life really is I can live that out in in everyday cooking.
Emmanuel, one of the things that you've said is one cannot move forward without looking to the past, which I think is somewhat of the concept of sepia. Obviously, the idea of old photographs, the sepia tone. I wonder if you could elaborate on that in terms of how you were thinking about that as you constructed your concept for a restaurant.
I think there are several things. One is I feel that sometimes we do things very quickly and we evolve very quickly and we forget our roots, we forget, you know, our past. And some of the restaurants that I worked or some of the places that I go to sometimes miss a soul or miss, you know, some essence. And with Sepia, we really wanted to be a restaurant that has the eye on the past, that has, you know, a lot of tradition in it, a lot of the culture that, you know, that used to, you know, to have that maybe we don't have anymore. With Sepia, the building, you know, is from 1890. There's a lot of beautiful features of the building that we want to keep. You know, the exposed bricks. There is also a lot of antiques. You know, you'll see throughout the space. The floor is a beautiful Art Nouveau, you know, tile. And then, you know, move on to the table presentation. You'll see some of the patterns for the flatware, for the glassware. And then in the dishes also, you got a lot of inspiration from, you say, peasant food or more rustic type of things. And it gives, you know, a lot of warmth. Feel that, you know, people feel, you know, very connected to. Chef, what do you think?
Correct, definitely. For me, doing this menu, I had to, it was trying to balance, you know, my history and the modernity that I've seen and worked with, but again, like Emmanuel says, going back to the roots, the artisan cheeses that we get, you know, the product that you know, it's all, you know, within driving distance, our farmers, our poultry, our pigs, our lamb, you know, and such. So, you know, it's great to go really look at cooking in the sense of why am I cooking this way, instead of, oh, you know, I did this in my job and he did this before and that chef learned that way. Instead, it was really, again, searching to why am I really doing this way. And again, it opens up, you know, that connection to the past.
I wonder, was the name at all a double entendre because sepia is cuttlefish in Spanish? Was there any, I know you have octopus on the menu, but you don't have cuttlefish, but
right.
Was there any consideration of that, or no, is that just me being?
Well, the sepia tone, you know, in photography is a color, you know, and it does come from cuttlefish ink.
Ink.
So there's several meanings to the word sepia. Obviously, the photography which we have in our, you know, in our business cards, and we have actually a room that will have a beautiful collection of old photography on Chicago, dating back 1890 to maybe the 1920s. But also, you know, sepia is also the past. You know, it's nowadays with a look on the back of the past.
So you guys are very experienced. I mean, it's not like you were, you know, hanging a blanket on the side of the barn and hoping people would come. I mean, you know, you were, Kendall, you were on the opening team at True, you were at Nomi, likewise, you've opened hotels all around the world, you know, so you guys have a lot of experience. The other that comes with that is, you probably know how to open a restaurant, or you probably know how to be successful, and, you know, the early kind of returns on you guys has been that's true, that everybody loves what you guys did, and you're welcome to the neighborhood, and you guys are doing really well, and so, I guess, you do know what you're doing, and I wondered what that was. If you could identify what you thought about, and you didn't know it would be successful, but what you thought success meant, and what you bring that somebody else, and not don't even worry about anybody else, just, you know, what makes a successful restaurant.
You know, I get always a question, you know, what makes a restaurant successful, and I always say the same answer, you know, there's no secret about it, you know. You need to provide, you know, a welcoming environment, you know, give our guests a pleasant experience. You need to provide a good service, friendly service without being overbearing. Great food, great value. It's all about the customer satisfaction. So, you know, that you present it in a certain way or another, it's not really important. It's really what is important is that you really give a wonderful experience to the guest. And once a restaurateur is really customer focused, I think he or she will be very successful.
I think one of the things I've heard a lot about is the service. People are like, you know, it's just great service, which, you know, in the first couple of weeks of a restaurant, that always seems to be the stumbling block. I wonder how you guys achieve that so early.
Well, I think we're not perfect. Unfortunately, we're still going through the kinks, but we have a wonderful team of genuinely hospitable people, and that's also some of the things that really attracted me about Chicago, because I think that the Midwestern hospitality is very genuine. It's very warm, it's very welcoming, and, you know, if we once in a while make some mistakes, I think people will be, closing an eye if we're very genuine about the mistake and if we really try to repair it. So I think we have a great team, you know, in place, and they're trying their best, you know, to give a friendly yet, professional service.
What about the food? I mean, one of the things you think about is there's 12,000 plus restaurants in the city, and, you know, it's like a new one opens up every day. It must be intimidating to think about, you know, how do you innovate, or does it matter if you innovate? Or...
Again, I think that genuineness that Emmanuel talks about, I think, can be felt through the food somehow in some way. You know, when people who really love what they do are cooking for you, you can definitely taste it, no matter what it is, just a soup. It could be something, hot cuisine, whatever, anywhere in the middle. But, genuine, true love of it, with no, you know, no ego, no desire to be anything but who you are. And I think, you know, for us in the kitchen, we work very hard, but we try to have fun. We try to be genuinely, you know, family within each other, so we support each other. And, again, like Emmanuel says, I have a great team in the kitchen as well. My sous chef is fantastic. And so there's nothing that, you know, that really can go wrong with a great, wonderful environment. So.
One of the things you said is what we put on the plate is how we relate to others. I guess you mean if you're a sloppy cook, you're probably sloppy with how you deal with life and people. I don't know.
Well, definitely. I think who you really are shows in almost all facets of your life. The way you walk, the way you communicate with other people, the way, you know, that you just handle what you do on a daily basis. And then for me, it's cooking at this point in my life. And, you know, I love it. And I try to be as pure with myself and do and cook and act accordingly.
You were going to say something before that, you see?
We're very passionate people. You know, we love what we do, and, you know, we have a team that also share the same values. So, at the end, you know, it shows in the experience. It shows on the plate. It shows, you know, at the table. It shows in the atmosphere. It's an industry, you know, that you asked before, you know, why the success, you know. Again, it's, you know, because we also very passionate about what we do. We enjoy so much what we do that it people can feel it.
Is it, you know, one of the things I know, I think Thomas Keller at the French Laundry, he has in his kitchen, he says it's all about finesse. Would you agree with that? Is finesse, it's the details more than anything?
It's definitely, the detail is very important. You know, we try to create an environment that is not too stuffy, that is not too, overdone. But if you really pay attention to all the things we're doing, there's a lot of details that have been put into it on the food. You know, the menu may appear to be, you know, when you read it, may appear to be maybe more straightforward or simple, but the technique, the work that goes into the preparation is quite a lot. And at the end, people really can, you know, maybe they cannot explain, they can feel it, they can taste it, they can, you know, they can, the whole experience, they can feel that it's very different.
You went to culinary school as well.
I did, yes.
I understand there was an incident with cayenne. But
yeah, oh my God.
What happened there?
Oh, I was 15 years old. You know, I was studying in the culinary school, and it was one of those busy nights. You know, in our school, we have a full-fledged kitchen, and every week we go into different stations. So that week I was at the soup station, and I was doing a consommé. And I was, you know, I was rushing, and I misread the recipe. So instead of a pinch of cayenne pepper, I put a tablespoon. And ever since, you know, my schoolmates, my teacher made fun of me. And so I thought maybe, you know, I should not be a chef. Maybe I should do better, you know, in the front of the house and be a manager. So far, that served me quite well.
You haven't had any cayenne moments as a front of house manager?
Well, I've cooked at home a few times, and sure enough, every time I use the cayenne, I overdo it, so my friends always make fun of me now.
Have you had any interesting kitchen disasters in all of your years of cooking?
I'm sure. Quite a few.
I'm sure. Too many to name. I think when times get a little stressed in the kitchen and just one little thing goes wrong, then it feels like a disaster. When I was working in New York for Chef Rocco at Union Pacific, I was always just barely making it every day. And it was close to service, and I was making an herb puree in the blender, and I hadn't prepped enough herbs, so it was all at the bottom of the blender. I was trying to get it to mix in. I stuck a spoon in there. Of course, it exploded everywhere, and it went everywhere on the ceiling and everything. And I thought then, that was my cayenne moment, and I thought then, okay, I'm done. I walked downstairs, took my jacket off, and I had a moment. It's like, which way do I go? Do I quit, or do I keep doing this? And of course, I kept doing this.
That's great.
Which, ironically, you were working for Rocco, and Rocco, of course, had a few moments on TV. One of the things people seem to overlook or have overlooked in the last few years is that he was an amazing chef.
Oh, yes.
And that, yes. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a guy who was Food and Wine Best New Chef, and you know, and people have kind of wanted to knock that because of the TV show. But I mean, what do you learn from a guy like that? He obviously was a great chef.
Technically and taste and passion, he's unrivaled for sure. When I was there, you could just sense it when you were with him in his presence. Whenever he, you know, did anything, it was always completely. He was in the moment. So that was completely fascinating. Because he never let down, but you know, when he cooked, he was there, and there's nothing else but him and the food, and that's all it was. And
so how did you guys meet? You guys met at Nomi, right?
Yeah, we were together.
That's
correct.
Yeah.
One of the things I read about, I forget what the program was, but it was related to the Walt Disney Service.
Uh-huh.
I wonder, I think I'd read something about how you had learned something about their service philosophy, and I wonder what that was, and if that's something you still bring with you, or
when I first came to the U.S. I worked at Walt Disney World in Florida, and we had about a few days of training and orientation, and I really and Disney is really wonderful about the whole philosophy and how they. You know, how they consider their cast rather than employees, how they go on stage rather than going to work. And I've really learned a great deal. You know, in France, the work environment is very different. It's much more formal. There's a formality that you don't find here in the U.S. And I think the focus also on the employees, on the team, it's much stronger, or was, you know, more stronger here in the U.S. than it was in France. I haven't worked in France for over 20 years, so I'm not sure now how it is. But I was really, impressed the way Disney, you know, train and manage, you know, their people and how they make them grow, how they you know, give them cross training and how they, you know, they support. And when I joined Hyatt International afterwards, I felt a very similar connection. And when I moved to Hong Kong with Hyatt, we at one point had quite a large turnover and we had a brand new team. And I used a lot of my experience from Disney to really show a different style, different, you know, different team, and create a lot of excitement. And that's something that really helped me throughout my career and over the years.
What did you guys like about one another when you guys met at Nomi that you decided to do this together?
I'm bold. No, you know, we've known each other for quite a few years, and as a chef, you know, I knew how Kendall, you know, his technique, his skills were really unbelievable. But as you know, for me, the person was as important. When we sat down and talked about opening, you know, creating CPR, we really discussed how we envision, you know, our team, how we envision working. You know, it obviously the food and the service was a big part, but more how we as you know, as a team, how we manage it and how we saw the future. You know, the growth, and Kendall is a very humble person. You know, he has tremendous talent, and I know that he will do very, very well. And he has always been, I've always been a big fan of him, you know.
What do you like in Emmanuel?
A lot of things, actually. I don't want to tell him everything, but...
go ahead. You know, I'm all ears.
No, when we met to talk about our possible project, I relate... Everything that happens to me, I like to live in the moment, and I relate what's happening in my life at the moment. And what I didn't want to put myself in a situation or work with someone closely on such a tremendous project that I wasn't going to be able to trust, that I wasn't, you know, going to be able to believe in their passion and talent, or that I wasn't going to put myself in a situation where someone did not see all the little details. I have that eye, but I wanted to have someone to really, really make those things happen. And Emmanuel is extraordinary at, you know, taking care of everything that you can, that one can think of, and then a little more. So he's a wonderful person in that respect, and I trust him completely, and that's all I took.
So you've worked with some hardcore chefs: Julian Serrano, Sandro Gamba, Rick Tremonto, Joe Ho.
Sure.
You know. I mean, these guys, I know, I mean, they're brilliant, but they're also tough. I wondered, is your style similar? Are you a tough guy to work for in the kitchen, or are you, how do you manage a kitchen staff?
Tough, perhaps, but in a different way. Again, I now look at what I want to do versus, you know, how I was brought up or trained or chefed myself. And, yeah, some of these guys were screamers and such, as of course, you hear all the stories, and they're all true, but I definitely, that's not the person that I am, and so I couldn't run a kitchen, or I couldn't run my own home in that same sense. So it's just who I am, and you know, again, people that work with me understand that, and there's no pretense, I'm not hiding behind anything, so they know when something is not right. I even almost don't have to tell them, they just know, so no reason to really scream.
You have Blackbird Nubeck around the corner, but this area of town is really noted as a restaurant row. I mean, obviously farther down Randolph. How did you choose this location? Why did you choose this location?
We, you know, we looked at several areas, and we definitely want to be close to downtown. And I used to live a few blocks away from here, and I used to drive by quite often. Originally, we looked at more the River North area, and the space was not quite right. And when this space opened up, we felt that being across from Primitive, you know, this beautiful store, being around the corner from Blackbird and Avec, would, even though we were not on Randolph, we felt that we were still, you know, creating a similar style in terms of quality, in terms of attention to details. We wanted to be close as well to the Loop, so that we could, you know, when we're ready to open for lunch end of next month, we'll, you know, we want to be close enough to to accommodate our game. So the space was not very impressive when we first saw it, but with the right energy and the right talent, Gary Lee, the designer, did a wonderful job. And
this used to be an old 1890 print shop, is that right?
That's right. During
what did they print?
Early part of the century, 1900, they used to print money for the government.
And, oh, really?
Yes, and actually there was a room where they used to with shelves where they used to keep all the plates, to print. I somehow wanted to keep that room, but it was right in the middle of the dining room and was too cumbersome, to keep. But
you didn't find any extra $100.
I looked everywhere, unfortunately, we didn't find anything. So
not that we know of.
That you can't talk about. One of the things I think is interesting is a lot of the guys that you've worked for in the kitchen have people who definitely don't tone down their cooking. It's, I know Sandro's known for his liberal use of cream and butter, and certainly Rick Tremonto is, with his caviar staircases, sure, and his presentations. I know that you used to live near Chez Panisse, and I've heard that maybe you even spent some time there before you started back here. So, and I guess if I had to look at your cooking and what I know about it, you're definitely taking it to a different level in the sense of, like, we were just talking about your pork rillette. You're making a pistachio brittle with it, which is kind of unique and really interesting. But if you had to hew towards one school, it seems that you hew more towards the Chez Panisse side of things. I wonder how you made that choice. Is that just who you are?
It was going back to my real first culinary that I wanted to be in this career epiphany happened when I was living in San Francisco and attending Berkeley. So for me now, it's going back again to the reason why I love this business. And my first job was at Masa's with Julian Serrano. So, I had to really find out not only why I'm staying in this business, but now that it's a venture that people are that I'm responsible for, people's lives and their passions and such. So I had to be true to myself. And the reason why I really loved food when I was in San Francisco was, again, the fresh produce, the simpleness of preparation that they apply to it. And it was all product driven, and it was more not only the food, but it was the style of living, and it was just a part of your everyday life, as opposed to, okay, now we're going to go have some food. It was just everyday living. You walk down the street, and in the little grocery stores, you find nice bottles of wine, you find fresh produce, top quality stuff. So,
I know when I went to Napa Valley, when San Francisco and Berkeley and all that. I mean, we ate everywhere. We ate at, like, Zuni and, and in the French Laundry. And, in the French Laundry, I wasn't surprised, but I knew what I was getting into. And, of course, you read about Chez Panisse all these years and everything. But I remember still being surprised by Chez Panisse and delighted. And I thought it was, with the laundry in its own way, one of the greatest dining experiences I've had. And the amazing thing about that is that's, like, 30 years later that they're still doing this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? I mean, having gone back there recently, and I mean, what goes through that place that keeps the soul of the restaurant open for 30 years?
From my time that I was there, it's definitely the soul of it. I think the original soul that Alice Waters, put into it, it's generally felt there. Everyone who works there generally believes in what they do, and does and acts and speaks accordingly. The cooks are all passionate, pure cooks who, pound for pound are probably some of the best cooks I've seen in one kitchen. Everyone in the front of the house, people who answer the phones are shucking peas. It's a family again, and again, it's a genuine soul-felt experience to just walk in the door and experience that. There's definitely a soul there.
I think there's a few places in the world, few restaurants in the world that are timeless. In design, in cuisine, the style, can evolve. People may, see new trends in cuisine, but at the end, when you really focus on the ingredients, that style never dies. 100 years later, it will still be very popular, and that's why also the sepia. We we have the eye on the past, but, you know, we also look forward, because people, you know, today's lifestyle, people want to eat healthier, they want to eat, you know, a lot of organic products, they want to eat, you know, a lot of vegetables. You know, you won't see all the butter and the cream, you know, that we have, you know, that you see on a lot of menus. And the same with the design, you know, if you see the design, CPR, it's a timeless design, the bricks, the exposed brick. I mean, the building is from 1890, and we try to keep a lot from that era, so.
Well, and you're from France, which 30 years is a baby restaurant showcase.
Sure.
Sure. There's 100 restaurants that have been open for 100 years there. Do you have that hope for this? I mean, do you want this to be an endeavor that lasts for the rest of your life?
I'm really hoping that in 10, 20, 30 years from now, people who go to Sepia will have the same experience that they have today.
Speaking of details, I had read that you guys have special ice cubes. Is that true? They melt slower or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we do, you know, that, again, it's in the old days, it used to be done, and then we somehow got very busy, or the restaurants got very busy and stopped using them. But in the old days, you know, they used to use large ice cubes, you know, especially anything on the rocks, you know, anything spirits-wise, you know, you don't want to melt, you don't want your single malt whiskey to be diluted. So we have a special ice cube for on the rocks. We you're asking us a bit too soon. We are going to implement it next week. But
is it like a Coladraft machine? Or is it
We have actually a machine that makes a larger ice cube that we use for in the shakers. And then we also do a special ice cube for on the rocks, which is a different ice cube, which is a larger size for anything on the rocks.
And you guys also have a Marseille soap that the company's been in business since 1688.
Correct. Yes. Again, we love old traditional recipes in Armenian food, but also this soap has been made in antique, you know, copper cauldrons since the late 1600, and they don't use any chemicals. You know, everything is natural oils. They use some sea kelp, some sea salt. And, you know, it's naturally antibacterial, you know, it's naturally moisturizer. I mean, it's a beautiful soap, and we're so happy to feature such products.
You know, it's something I always ask everybody I interview, especially food people, but, you know, it's kind of the last meal question. If you guys knew, you know, this was going to be your last meal, what do you guys think you would want?
For me, it's not really what I would want to eat, is who I would want to be with. You know, it's much more important, I think, the company.
I always ask that question, too. So if you were having a dinner party, who would you invite, living or dead, anyway?
Yeah, I think my my closest friends and my family, my relatives. You know, I've been away for over 20 years now, away from France, and I really miss, you know, my siblings, my nieces, my cousins, and we used to twice a year get all together with the family, with my grandparents, with my cousins, and we have quite a large family. So I think it would be to do one more time, you know, one my last would be with them plus my friends, and
and there'd be a lot of really good charcuterie and blood sausage.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm from the northern part of France, so there's a lot of Flemish influence and some really strong cheese and.
Like Roubaix or Lille?
Not far from Lille. Yes, yeah. So we have special rabbit recipe with prunes, and I know that in America prunes are no, but I really love that. It's
that's because we associate it with digestion.
Yes, but it's so tasty.
Unfortunately,
you know?
Yeah,
it's so
but
tasty.
They're great. I mean,
yeah, they're really wonderful.
I mean, come on, how can you go wrong?
Yeah, I have a very good friend. Her name is Hélène Lesage. She lives actually in Iowa City with her husband David, and she's from Lille. She's from my hometown. And she's a wonderful, wonderful cook, and she also makes baguettes and ficelle and croissant and pain au chocolat. And every Saturday, people line up, you know, and she would do some pâtés as well, some rabbit pâtés, homemade jams as well. And yeah, they're wonderful.
What do you think your last meal would be, or who, or both?
No. Well, I miss my grandmother's cooking very much. She's one of those people who really, really put a lot of genuine love and her soul in it.
And she was Ecuadorian?
Yes. I grew up eating at that time what was just, family fare, and we eat a lot of soups, a lot of stews, a lot of pork product, of course. But anything that she cooked was always extraordinary, and it's the best memories that I have, and I would love to...
What particular dishes? Is there anything like...
Well, she would make a seafood soup every time on Easter, and it was a whole family gathering, and at first when I was young, I almost particularly didn't like it, but I think over the years, I associated with seeing all my relatives, all my cousins from out of the woodwork would come in, and so, it became an occasion, and one year, I fell in love with the soup, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's like a seafood stew soup that they do during Easter, and it's amazing. No, but it's more like creamy. It's got a little like a salt cod in it and such. And at first it was peas and a lot of things like that. It's quite heavy, but quite delicious.
Do you like to make a nod at all to your Ecuadorian roots in terms of your cooking? Is there something you might do, or is it?
I don't have any sort of pretense that I know enough about the food down there. When we moved up here to the States, it was a bit sad for me, which is probably why the fondness for it grew even more. We really didn't eat so much the Ecuadorian food as much. My mom didn't like to cook as much, not like her other sisters, who were all fantastic cooks. So, it was like, again, for me, it's something that I miss,
Well, thanks for doing this, guys.
Oh, no, our pleasure. Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. As always, drop me a line at mjnagran@hungrymag.com. See you next month, and in the meantime, stay hungry. Four, three.